Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world. From the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines, you'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. It's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. For those people that might be new listeners, you might be unfamiliar with my voice. My name is Peter Mingles. We started this a long time ago. And when we started this a long time ago, it's like something like 6 years or something like that. We were looking for guest hosts. And, of course, I had just met Jim Turner, who is an attorney over in Washington, D.C. for Citizens for Health and has a website, citizens.org. And, of course, the first person or one of the first persons I thought about for this radio show would be James Turner. Jim is a really great guy. He's been associated with these types of issues for a really long time. And although I met him as a, you know, the home-based business entrepreneur when we're working with MLM companies, the stuff that Jim does expands so much farther beyond that. But the topics that he covers affect probably your life and sometimes your finances and many times certainly your attention, and he does a lot of great things. So if you want to sign up for the newsletter, go to citizens.org, citizens, citizens.org. Sign up for the newsletters, check out the site. The organization is called Citizens for Health, and Jim Turner is just a great gentleman. We do this radio show every Friday at noon Eastern time when he's available and in town, because as an attorney, you know, sometimes your Fridays are kind of busy, either traveling or in court or whatever, dealing with stuff. When Jim does these radio shows, these are really great radio shows that you can archive and listen to at any time. Unlike certain shows that you might listen to that might be about news, you'd say, well, that's old news. Why go back and re-listen to that? Because there's new news that overcomes the old news or overshadows the old news. This is something where you can hear it over and over and over again, because Jim always shares with us some history and some topics and some opinions that are certainly worthwhile. So it is always with great admiration that I introduce our Building Fortunes radio listening audience to Jim Turner. So, Jim, thanks for being here.
Well, thanks a lot for the nice words, Peter. We've had a good time on these shows, and I want to continue doing it. Your point about the history of this, all these sets of issues, I think is very important. We've been battling, I personally have been battling on the natural health world and the MLM world, or the home marketing world, home business world, for over 50 years. I started in 1968 with Ralph Nader. One of the very first things that happened is I went over to FDA for an interview, and they were trying to write some very severe regulations pushing dietary supplements out of the market. And I talked to one of the officials that was involved in that, and I said, you know, there are 50,000 letters and postcards that you've received against what you're doing. And that was phenomenal. I mean, the most they'd ever received on an issue prior to that was like, you know, 80. On caffeine and Coke. I mean, that was a hot issue for the FDA, caffeine and Coke, back, you know, 80 comments. Here they had 50,000. And I'm saying, you know, you got 50,000 comments here saying what you're doing is wrong. And the person said to me, this is an FDA official, he said, well, that's 50,000 quacks. That's the mentality that I've been working with over the last, you know, as I say, like I said, 51 years. That was in 1958. And I did write the book, The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on Food Protection at the FDA, and it had issue after issue there. For example, we were very instrumental in causing the FDA to review cyclamate and ultimately say that it can't be marketed in the United States, the only country in the world it can't be marketed in. Why is that? Because the Food and Drug Law says if you can't prove that it's safe, you can't market it, and you can't prove it's safe, and it can't be marketed. Other countries have laws that are similar to that, and they're marketing it. And people are, in fact, getting very serious side effects that appear to be related to the sweeteners. So the big sweetener that came along once we ended up with cyclamate having been removed from the market here in the U.S., the next thing that came along was aspartame, quote, NutraSweet. It started emerging in the marketplace. Basically, it turned out to be approved 2 years after cyclamate was banned, or the first time, about two and a half years. And we objected. We said, this thing's not safe. Look at all the science. And it stayed off the market for 11 years. We actually kept it off the market by requiring it to be looked at. A public board of inquiry was impaneled to look at it. And the public board of inquiry ruled that it should not be on the market because it was not shown to be safe. Donald Rumsfeld came in as a part of the transition team for President Reagan, and they overruled the public board of inquiry. They got an FDA commissioner who was appointed by Reagan. He happened to have been a doctor at the Pentagon when Rumsfeld was the secretary at the Pentagon the first time. And this doctor becomes FDA commissioner and overrules the public board of inquiry, and it goes on the market. Now, what was the issue that we were raising there? We had a very serious issue. We continued to raise it for the next, 20, 25 years. The very serious issue we raised was that NutraSweet showed glioblastomas in animals at a very increased level that caused a serious potential for brain tumors in humans that use NutraSweet. It also turns out, by the way, that there is evidence suggesting that if you hold your cell phone too close to your head routinely, that will also create potential tumors, create tumors. And I was always amused by the industry's position on that. Their position was, it may create tumors, but they're benign tumors. My view is a benign tumor or a harmful tumor, I'd prefer not to have an instrument that I hold up to my head that creates a tumor. Nonetheless, the evidence that the interaction between NutraSweet and cell phones and, EMF coming from other areas as well, might actually increase the virulence of glioblastomas, I think is a very important question that should be resolved. And it is not resolved. Just whatever they tell you, it is not a resolved question. And then I noticed that, people like Senator Kennedy, Senator McCain, Beau Biden, son of the vice president, are people who got very high profile notice of having died from glioblastomas, which are they went up approximately in the year after NutraSweet was introduced to the market, they went up 10%. That's a pretty significant range in 1 year. Whether they've gone up or not since then, it's hard to tell because the data started being massaged. We did a very interesting program for 60 Minutes in which this was all laid out. And Mike Wallace was fascinating. He really thought that if he went to the FDA with the data, he would get a response that said, yes, we should really take this seriously. Instead, he got stonewalled by a deputy commissioner, an assistant commissioner at the FDA, who stonewalled on 60 Minutes and then went 2 years later to work as chief of research for Monsanto, the owners and manufacturers of NutraSweet. The reason I was saying all of that is history. That's all going on. That NutraSweet is out there. People are using it. By the way, it never did reach the market that they had intended. And ultimately, Monsanto, I think, sold it off to their to members of their management, and it's out there. And it's a nice little company, $1 billion company. And I say little when it's for $1 billion company, and I mean it. In today's world, $1 billion company is pretty small. And these guys are, former executives of some kind, and they have a nice little hobby to, feed this stuff to the public. Since the information is being blocked by the FDA, so we can't get it out, you have to pick it up in the ancillary media like this. And those people who know about it don't use it. And as I say, it's never reached the market they had intended. In fact, very surprisingly, there was a Gallup poll back there in the 70s where 30% of the public rejected NutraSweet. It was fascinating because the public doesn't know anything about these things. When I say the public in quotation marks, you know, the mass media, the stuff that people are supposedly fed and so on. But 30% of the public found its way through to be able to say, we don't like this stuff. And as I say, it didn't ever reach that market. But this has been going on, you know, certainly ever since the end of the Second World War. That the food additive amendments were passed in 1958, and the food industry has been working really, really, really hard to get around those amendments ever since. And the FDA closes in on some and takes some action here and some action there. But as a system, it does not protect the public. You're on your own. You've got to protect yourself. So find the information and stay away from stuff that about which there is even a question. And move forward effectively and understand listening to things that have happened in the past is very, very important to understand what's happening now. How about if I give you another example?
Absolutely.
Would you like that?
Absolutely.
We're in the midst of something called the opioid epidemic. Thousands of people are dying all over the country because of the opioid epidemic. And that epidemic has been put onto the country by a company called Purdue Pharma, which is owned by, it was owned, I think they just divested themselves, owned by a family called the Sackler family. Well, interestingly enough, way back in 1959, the Sacklers created the most important crisis at FDA up until that time. They created a scandal in working at FDA and working on FDA. First of all, the founder of the family, you can see his name on art galleries all over the country. You watch for art galleries' names and know right away that that's one of the examples of how a fortune has been made by bending the law. That's where they get the money for art galleries. So here's this guy over there. His idea in life is let's get opium or heroin, one of its derivatives, let's get that made a prescription drug so that we can make a bunch of money. And the fact is that opium or heroin does, in fact, have the ability to reduce pain. So they came up with these things called opioids, and they got them on the market eventually. But back in 1959, what they came up with was something called combination antibiotics. They were going to mix antibiotics together and create a framework. And he was always out campaigning for getting these painkillers on the market. And he was also campaigning for these so-called combined antibiotics. And what he did was fascinating. What he created a business partnership with the chief regulator of antibiotic drugs at the FDA, chief regulator. So there's an FDA regulator working with a drug company owner. And what that regulator would do is he would deliver speeches at trade associations saying how good these products were. And here's the FDA regulator. He's saying these are good products. And, of course, you can imagine how the investments went when the FDA regulator says these are good products. The speeches were in large part written by Sackler's PR firms and subsequently the companies that made these products, Sackler's and others, printed large numbers of these speeches given by the FDA official and then sold them to the drug companies. And this FDA official in 1959 made in the neighborhood of $500,000 at that time. $500,000 in 1959 dollars, you know, today would be worth something in the neighborhood of $2 million, something like that. It was as close as you could come to a bribe as you could possibly be without just handing them a bunch of money. It got to be a huge scandal. There were congressional hearings. There was big, huge outcry. And then simultaneously, for some reason, or very shortly thereafter, the so-called thalidomide crisis emerged, where a drug that was given during pregnancy caused deformed children. And that got to be another huge worldwide scandal. So Congress, manipulated by the Sacklers and the drug company executives, moved in and created what they called the new drug application amendments, and created a system that only very, very wealthy companies could navigate. and they created a way in which only companies which had a lot of money could sell drug products, and they went out and made that work, and did nothing at all to address the Sackler-Crook problem. And what we ended up with was a regulatory process which inevitably would lead to the overuse of antibiotics. It would lead to biologicals that were manufactured in a way that was not safe. They had to be moved from NIH over to FDA. We got opioids on the market. Basically, we have a very difficult situation where the regulators can't possibly cope with what's going on in the pharmaceutical industry. It's just one company in the pharmaceutical industry is several times larger than the FDA. It's a total mismatch. Now that the attorneys generals are getting involved and there's a much larger law enforcement activity going on, there is a potential of some kind of payback. But the payback comes after the ravaging of death and disability across the country. The Sacklers are now working really, really hard with lawyers to protect their multi-billion dollar fortune. Some prosecutors are after them for that. But again, the point here is that you can learn a lot about where we are today by going back and looking at where we were back then. And 1959, huge Sackler scandal at the FDA. The family and the drug company they owned manipulated the agency then. They've manipulated it ever since. I mean, I watched as very good people were invited to be involved in the advisory committee that Purdue Pharma created to ensure that there would be no overselling of these very, very dangerous opioids. Good people working really hard, making recommendations and so forth. What that did was just drag out the time before the issue hit the public papers and created the opportunity for much more death and disability. The company just seduced them into believing that they were doing something positive when in fact they were not. It's a very, very important to understand that what happens today is in the context of everything that led up to today. And what is going on today is creating the context for tomorrow. And it's tough on activists when they come across an issue and they start fighting it and don't realize that the depth of the evil and destructiveness and the roots of the badness go deep, deep, deep down into the past and into the society. So, again, the idea of, you know, going back and listen to these calls, good idea, and read some stuff about what's been going on. The chemical piece is still, you know, you can still get it on Amazon. It's old. Its examples are from the old days. Its general principles still apply today. So you got me on a rant here today, Peter. That's great. I didn't mean to rant so much, but here we are.
I'll emphasize what you said with my experiences with working with you. There's, you know, I'm however old I am, I'm 57, but I'm not, this is a relatively new area for me to be, you know, exploring within the last decade, let's say. And sometimes I'll say something and based on today's knowledge, and I'll say something to you or someone else, sometimes it happens with Betsy, and I'll say something and she'll say, oh, or you'll say, oh, and I'm like, I'll say, oh, well, wait a minute, there's a story behind that. And you'll say, well, you know, two decades ago, this is the way it was. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I would have no way of knowing. I would have had no way of knowing, because the way they positioned and sold and you research the information today, it has nothing to do with the past that you're referencing. But if you didn't know, knowing the past that you're referencing means everything relative to the deception that you're seeing today. So the idea of what you said, I'm just saying in a slightly different way, whether it's the polio vaccine, like everybody says, oh, you need vaccines because it eradicated polio. Well, how did you hear that? Or, you know, sometimes I'll reference a person and you'll say, or, you know, somebody will say, well, that's interesting because, you know, 15 or 30 years ago, they were the problem that they are trying to fix today. And you dig in a little bit and you just say, ooh, like, wow, I had no idea. I was basing stuff on today's information. So I just wanted to kind of, punctuate everything you just said using my own words and experiences. You've taught me a lot that before I jump in to say, okay, here's my experiences from today based on today's research, I better go back and look because I could be completely wrong, deceived by the stories that they're concocting today. So I'll let you punctuate anything that I had just said if you wanted to, but
let me give you an example of a backstory. The television industry works really, really hard to find places to make money at. That's what they do. I mean, their job is to create an audience that they can sell things to. So they create the audience and they start selling stuff. And they've gone through, when cigarettes got taken off the air, they were a huge major support of the media. When they got taken off the air, they had to find various things. They've now, over the last 5 or 10 years or so, hit on the drug industry, and they put these drug things out there, and they keep advertising these drugs. Now they have to say, this drug may have bad symptoms, bad effects, and these effects can be. And one of them even says the bad effect might include death. But anyway, it's there. But there's another little thing on those ads that I've always been intrigued by. And that is the statement that says, if you feel that you're having difficulty meeting your copays, call this company and they may be able to help you. Well, what happens is, it's interesting, the copay is there in the law as a matter of policy because the culture believes and the laws believe and our ethos believes that markets actually help make decisions. So therefore, if you have to pay something for the drug, you'll engage a more intelligent buying mind when you do it. You'll say, well, maybe I should get the cheapest form of this, or maybe I should get this brand rather than that brand, or whatever. The whole idea was to create the opportunity for the market to engage, and people would say, well, it's going to cost me $20 if I go over here, but it'll only cost me $9 if I go over here. And that's true. You can do that. So on comes these things saying, the copays. And now these companies don't want to lose market because there are copays. They don't want to do that. They don't want people to say, I'm not going to buy your drug because it costs me too much in a copay. They want to solve that problem. So they say, come to us and we will help you. And what they do is they refer you to a nonprofit organization that has been set up as a charity to help you because you can't afford the copay, supposedly. I mean, that's the argument. And so they get money, and they're up in the $100 million range, some of these foundations, and they get money. And then they take that money and they give it to you so that you can pay your copay and you can get the drug for free. The trick of the whole thing is that the $90 million or $100 million that they have to spend comes almost exclusively from the drug industry. So the drug guys there's something that's there to discipline the market so that there will be an effort to make something that's valuable at a reasonable price. And the way the Congress thought to do that was to create copays so that everybody who buys a drug feels what it costs. And the drug industry steps in there and creates the impression that there's a charity that will help you. And it turns out that's just the drug company's PR program or market development program, putting money into that foundation. It's just totally misleading as to what it's all about. And of course, it's right there in the ad. Call this number and we'll help you out. And this is not what was intended by the law. It's not what is supposed to happen by markets, and it's not what anybody's expecting when they're in that exchange. But that's what's going on, hidden. And that's, again, one of those things that if you know the whole history from the beginning to now, you can get a feel for what's actually going on there and understand. And then you can decide, if you're going to buy a drug and someone's there to give it to you for free and you want to do it and you have to do it. I mean, it is not a stupid decision to go to that foundation and get some money and buy the drug with a copay if that's what you feel you need to do. However, the companies themselves are just deluding everybody by making it sound like the whole marketplace idea is working when it has been completely undermined. So that's another example of how the backstory actually helps you understand the front story.
Wow. Excellent information. I know, just excellent information. Okay, so great history, great explanations, great stuff that's happening today. And it'll be interesting to see eventually what happens with these drug companies, because they're getting really whacked. They're getting really whacked. Now, maybe you can help me explain one thing. I'll just kind of bring up a topic. I saw something that's confusing. I'm going to call me the general public. There was a verdict just recently that Johnson & Johnson was being sued lost a suit, where now the victim, a 26-year-old boy, was, I think I got my facts right, was found, so Johnson & Johnson was found guilty, if you will, or wrong, and they have to pay $8 billion to some 26-year-old kid who took a drug and he formed man boobs, basically man breasts. So they wrote the doctors wrote the prescription. It was slightly different than what the drug was made for, but it was okay anyway. Johnson & Johnson is now being sued. They are found guilty in the court of law. Punitive damages, $8 billion to this 26-year-old kid. And all that stuff is very confusing for me, because if I'm a general public guy and I'm reading the headlines as stated, and I'm like, $8 billion. First of all, I don't want to take anything away from this young gentleman's experience, but what are you going to do with $8 billion? And then I also say, well, how in the world is Johnson & Johnson going to be able to afford $8 billion? And I know that everything that I just said is a naive thought, but based on the way things are written, the general public thinks that Johnson & Johnson is going to pay $8 billion to some 26-year-old kid. Now, I know the appeals process is going to be a lot of lawyers are going to make a lot of money. So, you know, they're going to – BMW stock is going up. You know, Mercedes-Benz stock is going up, and kids are going to school. But the reality is Johnson & Johnson is never going to pay that $8 billion to that 26-year-old kid. So could you explain – and I call that very confusing – maybe even deceptively so. Why are there those headlines or those things that make headlines, even though we know Johnson & Johnson will never pay $8 billion to this kid or this young gentleman? So back to you.
Well, you're touching on a whole bunch of social policy issues that are all tangled together. And they begin with the very first word you said when you introduced that story, and that is punitive damages. Now, I am not always, if I'm going to talk about the details of a case, I'll go get the case and read it, and then I'll be able to parse out little pieces of it. I have not done that with the case. I know about as much about it as you do, having read the headlines and the stories and so forth. That's what I know. It is not a case or a situation which I'm working on from a legal representational point of view. So I'm talking about general issues that are raised by what you said. So first of all, punitive damages are meant to punish the company. They are not meant to compensate the boy. That's the first big confusion that exists in the whole area of these large payments that are ordered by a jury. A jury gets in there and says, these people have acted really obnoxiously. Now, let me explain to you again the history story. If you go back and read The Chemical Feast, you will see that there were, and that book was written, we published it in 1970. It was written between 1968 and 1970, and we had a group of about 30 law and medical students working in teams to look at aspects of the FDA regulatory process. And one of the things we discovered was that there were males growing breasts because of the chemicals being used to create growth in animals, growth hormones. They were being used in cattle and chickens, and the residue was getting in the water, and people downstream were drinking the water, and males downstream were growing breasts. I mean, that was an issue. And it's well known that these products that are hormonal in nature have that effect. It's well known in the sense that it wouldn't take a law student or a medical student more than a day to track down the fact. As far as the general public is concerned, I watch as the general public looks at something like this case and says, holy cow. Let me give you, I mean, I'll illustrate this in a really, really tough way. Congress passed a law about these kinds of drugs that interfere with the endocrine system. They passed a law called the Circle of Poison Law about maybe 15, 20 years ago. The House passed the law. The Senate passed the law. It went into conference committee, and that conference killed it. So understand, this is a law to control these kind of chemicals, passed both houses of Congress, and was still killed. That's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Now, let's go back to the Johnson & Johnson situation. The $8 billion is meant to be, and again, I don't know the specifics. I don't even know if $8 billion is the right number, but there are all these cases coming out now with these huge amounts of dump numbers. And then what happens, as you pointed out, is judges, senior judges at the appeals, or even some of the judges themselves right in the court. Jury comes in and says $8 billion, and the judge says, that's unreasonable. We're going to knock it down to $500 million. That happens. And then this appeals court's cut them down and so on. But the point is that the $8 billion is to be punitive. We should start in this country, we should start doing something that's very doable and reasonable, and that is that the punitive damages don't necessarily have to go to the plaintiff. You could have punitive damages determined, and a judge could step in and say, I am going to limit the amount to the plaintiff to $500 million, but the $7.5 billion I'm going to put into the foundation for the elimination of chemicals that grow breasts on men. He could do that. Now, I don't think there are many people that have asked them to do that, but you need to understand that in the cigarette settlement, billions of dollars were promised by the tobacco industry over the next 25 years from when they were settled, and those billions of dollars are being paid right now. They have the money, and they're paying it right into the states that brought the lawsuits, and the states have now been turned into marketers for smoking because they get so much money from the smoking folks. So that a lot of funds that were earmarked to be going into smoking, smoking abatement, are actually going into the promotion of smoking, another serious problem in our process. In addition to that, the notion that these people are being punished improperly is just fallacious. Everybody knows the story of the, I don't know if everybody knows, but a lot of people know the story that's put out by the industry folks saying some lady spilled coffee on her lap and got millions of dollars of damages. That's the story. Well, the story is that McDonald's, unlike other companies, was superheating its coffee. They were warned repeatedly. They had many complaints. And finally, one person went to court, and all the fact that McDonald's had been doing this was brought out in court. That's when the jury awarded the punitive damages and got McDonald's then finally did what it should have done before and stopped superheating its coffee. Now, the point here is not – the point is I'm talking about the system. And the fundamental problem with the system that we face right now is that there is no mechanism to stop the damage before it occurs. The only mechanisms we have are to allow a damage that is unacceptable to take place right in the plain sight of lawyers and doctors and business managers. The only people that don't realize that the damage is going on is the individual consumer, because they don't see the collective experience. And so the individual consumer is going along fat, up and happy. And, you know, Johnson has just got hit with another one on baby powder causing cancer. And you know, this is going to just keep going, because there are years. The drug industry was on its way out in 1962 because of those scandals that I mentioned earlier. And they jumped in and got this law passed in 62. And from 62 to about 80, they sat there just tuning themselves up. And since about 1980, they've just been pouring all kinds of things in which the risks are humongous. And it might well be that only a small percentage of people are killed or maimed by the product, whatever the product is, and there might be lots of other people getting really good benefits from it. But nonetheless, all these things are going to start pouring out now because, 10% of the American population is a pretty high number. And when they start showing up in court, it's a pretty large number of cases. The big problem we have is we don't have in place a mechanism to stop the damage before it occurs. Our legal system is designed to correct, it's actually designed to punish people who have caused the damage. And the FDA is a very, very, very weak reed in the face of these huge market powers and political powers that go on. You can see it in almost everything we see. Now, what's happening, I think, generally in the society now is that's all breaking down. They're like pus podules all over the society, and they're just breaking open, and people are saying, holy cow. The baby powder is causing cancer, and this drug is causing breasts on boys, and this sweetener is causing glioblastomas. Now, it may be doing all of those things in a minority of the population, and in the minds of the policymakers, if only a minority is killed, that's okay. They say if a product kills one in a million people, this is the official FDA policy, if a product kills one in a million people, it's considered to be safe. Now, it would be really nice if the public knew that. Somebody should tell them that. In fact, there are studies that go out there where animal tests are done and it kills one in a million. That should be on the label. You say, we think this is safe even though it kills one in a million. Maybe somebody doesn't want to take that chance. Maybe somebody does. I don't care whether they do or they don't. What I care about is that they don't know they're taking a chance. And they don't know that one in a million is what they can figure out. It could be. It's generally expected that it's between 10 and 100 times that. So it may be 10 in a million or 100 in a million, in fact, even though the animal study shows one in a million. These are all real problems that are out there. And as an individual consumer at the tiny end of the telescope, you're the one that all the statistics are focused on. They always go around saying, well, if you complain, it doesn't count because it's just anecdotal. But to the individual, an anecdotal complaint is a death sentence in many cases. And so, again, we don't have a system that will tell us beforehand that this thing might cause a problem. And therefore, we aren't given the opportunity to say, well, I don't think I want to participate in that particular market. So, again, you got me on a rant, and sorry to take off on that like that.
Love this stuff. So the most important part for those people listening in is this is the value of having Jim on our Building Fortunes radio show. So go sign up for his newsletter, citizens.org, CITIZENS.ORG. He's the attorney for Citizens for Health, and they've been around since 1993. And any one of the radio shows that you listen to, you can get a great educational lesson that you probably need to send to somebody else. So share this with other people and then get actively involved, because Jim has identified for me a lot of stuff that I wouldn't have known otherwise. So whether it's stuff like smart meters or stuff in vaccines or stuff with dental fillings or everything from, the homeopathy and GMOs and everything else we've spoken about, all really great information. And Jim does a great job, as you've heard, with explaining all this stuff on everyday things, because this is very confusing, and who's teaching us about these things nowadays? There's not a lot of people teaching us this stuff. So, Jim, I'll let you close it up, and thanks for being here. So I'll let you close it up.
Well, thanks a lot, Peter. I see we're a little bit over time, but these are important issues, and the public is really getting attuned. The reason you're seeing these issues about cleaning up all the bad stuff that went on in the past is because the public's getting more and more informed, more and more alert, more and more research is being done. A lot of these issues are coming up because research that's been being done and hidden since the 1980s is now coming into the public. And people are saying, holy cow, they knew this all this time and they're doing this? That's why you're getting $8 billion rewards. And more and more and more of that is going to happen. Now, in the meantime, the individual needs to be alert and protect themselves. For example, a rule I just adopt and use is don't use a new drug until it's been on the market for 5 years. At that point, you can figure that if there's going to be a problem, it's going to have turned up. If you must use a drug that's younger than 5 years, then work very, very hard to find out every piece of information you can about it. And you can start with that ad that's on TV, and you can start with the patient package with the package insert and the patient package insert, and you can learn. But every individual has to be on their toes to defend against every single product in the market, because every single one of them is there to make money. Every single one is there to make money. Now, some people make money for positive reasons and some people make money for gluttonous reasons. And but just understand that when it comes at any point, when it comes to weighing a health question versus a money question, the bias in this culture is for the money question. So when you're out there trying to buy something that you need, just remember they're not on your side to make sure that it's the best thing for you. That's why there are professionals to give you advice and then so on. Okay, yeah, we're over. So let's pick this up next week.
Great stuff, yeah. And then maybe a topic for another week would be, what are going to be the ramifications of these predatory practices on our economy? Because let's face it, these companies hire people. These companies have people working for them in their factories.
There's a real tough problem there. We can talk about that later. But, you know, the more you can keep a person alive and sick, the better it is for the economy, the way we measure things right now.
That's true.
The more chronic illness you can have, the more you can sell products. People are on 5 to 10 drugs a month now, the higher the numbers in the economy go. And we're going to have to, as a culture, we're going to have to sit down and look really closely at that. I think we should figure out how to revalue things on the basis of how helpful they are to somebody. How much does this add to life expectancy? Right now, if you go to a Washington policy guy and say, we can increase life expectancy by 5 years, they will say, but that will destroy Social Security. I mean, just understand, it's a built-in tension in the way that we look at the market right now.
There we go. Perfect. Excellent.
Okay,
way.
We can talk about all that in the next 2 weeks.
Next couple of weeks. Excellent. So we'll catch everybody next time. Citizens for Health. You just heard from Jim Turner. Go to citizens.org. Sign up for the newsletter. We'll see you soon. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly 2 decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.